Night, a Turkish invasion of Syria.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a talk by Alex Vitale on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at PSU Smith Center. Vitale directs the Brooklyn College Policing and Social Justice Project. He wrote The End of Policing. He demonstrates that the great expansion of police authority has come to exacerbate the very problems they're supposed to solve. He discusses how to counter the warrior mentality and police reliance on force and weaponry, and describes actually operating successful alternatives, but he insists that no reform will substantially succeed unless this country deals with deeply entrenched inequalities and injustice. Again, that's Alex Vitale on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at PSU Smith Center, 1825 Southwest Broadway. Imagine a world beyond policing. That's no impossible dream. More information can be found on KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Passport to Empowerment on Friday, October 18th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Vitalidad Movement Arts Center in Portland.
Passport to Empowerment will raise funds to support projects in rural communities and around the world to improve access to affordable and renewable energy, safe drinking water and sanitation systems, fuel-efficient cook stoves, and more.
Again, that's Passport to Empowerment on Friday, October 18th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Vitalidad Movement Arts Center, 116th Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Oh, my goodness. My favorite things, eh?
Hey.
Yes. Yeah, listen, this is KBOO 90.7 on the FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call in, because it is talk radio, 231-8187. But I really wanted to talk about the poisoning of the state of Oregon by a stupid government where we are allowing diesel trucks, unlike Washington, unlike California, to run unfiltered diesel right through town. And I want to point out that, stupidly, there is a middle school placed right at the center of it all, next to the freeway on I-5, where the kiddies, despite any kind of filters they put in, are going to be breathing poison. And I'm disgusted. And there's a lot of stuff about that. But the crazy in chief, the madman in charge, the incredibly bad president has moved again to do a stupid, stupid thing. And in this case, he's leaving our bestest, purestest supporters, hard-fighting, brave Kurds, in the direct way of the ambitions of Erdogan and the Turkish masses.
That was a little hyperbolic.
No, it
wasn't. Our bestest, greatestest supporters, the Kurds.
The Kurds have been significantly loyal, and they did most of the fighting in the wars in the Middle East after we botched the whole thing.
This is true. Yeah.
Well, where's the hyperbole?
Well, bestest to greatestest.
Oh, you don't like my praising.
There's several grammatical fouls in there, but the hyperbole
golly.
Is there also.
Oh golly.
But okay, we've talked about the Kurds several times on the show, but why don't you give us a quick refresher?
Well, look, just briefly, the Kurdish people are a huge number of ethnically distinct individuals living in essentially disempowerment in Turkey, where they are perceived as a threat because they're a significant part of the population. And remember, Turkey has a history of genocide. They destroyed the Armenian people with rape and ruin back after World War One. They're not to be trusted in any context of nationalist interest. But the Kurds also were the leading shock troops in our struggle against ISIS and all the rest of those guys. And in fact, they suffered the greatest losses. They exist as a people, but not a nation, mm-hmm. in Iran, in Iraq, in Syria, in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And they are for real, and they are very interesting. They're very powerful, very strong. By the way, women are treated equally within their ranks, unlike much of the Middle East. And I personally have almost a romantic sense of them, and I admit that. Mm-hmm. But I've never heard of their being particularly evil and horrible in the same ways that others in that region have been.
So to sum up,
Trump, in an infinite wisdom, in his infinite wisdom, for no apparent mm-hmm. reason, made a deal with Erdogan late at night to allow the Turks essentially to invade territory which is largely occupied by Kurds, which will mean, I think, a huge, huge slaughter.
So, to sum up, Kurds. All right, so the Kurds are a linguistically, culturally, and ethnically distinctive people.
Yes.
Like you said, a people without a homeland.
Yes.
Who live in swaths of the countries that you mentioned.
Yes.
And in portions of those countries, most notably in Iraq and Syria, the United States has acted militarily as a buffer to insulate the Kurds from the traditional oppression they've experienced at the hands of their majority neighbors.
Yes, right? But also the Kurds were the main fighting force in that region.
Yes,
and
indeed.
Extremely, we armed mm-hmm. them, but they were extremely effective.
Mm-hmm. So whatever you might think of the provenance of our military involvement in the Middle East, and we never should have been there in the first place. Let's stipulate that point from the start. Nevertheless, the Kurds now stand to be in a considerably worse position due to Trump's ill-advised decision.
Yes.
Right. So he's basically allowing the Turks to invade a piece of northern Syria across their own border, and in so doing, set the stage for a genocide of Kurds.
Yes, and remember that most of the weaponry that the Turks have is either Russian or, in the largest part, American. And they are part of NATO, and they have mm-hmm. an enormous army, and they will do what they do because their history has been always that of genocidal behavior.
Yeah, indeed.
And this is not the Turkish people, let's be clear. This is the leadership class.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, there's a famous genocide that to this day goes unacknowledged by the government.
Right, the Armenian genocide.
Armenian genocide, yeah. So if I'm thinking, if I am an autocratic dictator or even an elected leader with autocratic tendencies.
You don't look anything like that.
No, but let's just imagine.
Okay, I'm imagining.
For the sake of argument.
Sure.
I could pick up the phone, apparently, based on real world evidence now.
Yeah.
Call up Donald Trump. And, hang up the call knowing I can do essentially whatever I want.
Just have to be nice.
I just have to be nice. I have to say nice things.
Tell him how wonderful he is. Greatest genius of all time.
Maybe
stable genius.
A stable genius. You know, maybe a hint that I'm willing to let him erect one of his great phallic monuments in one of my towns.
Yeah, yeah.
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 This is bad, Joe.
It's beyond bad. It's so scary, I can't believe it. I mean, this guy... He exceeds even my worst expectations for a fascist leader at this time in history.
Yeah, it's really... You're right. That's a very good point. You think, how bad could it get? But then he goes and does something so ill-conceived that we push past barriers into previously unexplored territories of bad.
Well, the irony is the previous administration and his administration for a while had people who I regarded as too conservative, too reactionary, in fact, but they were experienced people in mm-hmm. intelligence, in military, and so on. He got rid of all of them, and now he has these weird, not even officially appointed people, because he has to avoid Congress, who are ambitious in a way that is far beyond their own capabilities.
Never a good combination.
No. Bad sign. No.
So, and then you're forced to wonder in this situation. Trump's facing an enormous amount of political pressure domestically.
Oh, yeah.
With impeachment inquiry underway and articles of impeachment looming. If I were a betting man, I would bet on articles of impeachment being enacted against this president.
Yeah, but it's the Senate at this point won't let that go.
Right. I'm talking on the House side.
Sure.
The enacting articles of impeachment is different than removing a president from office. So, one might conjecture, what is the president going to do to distract attention away from his domestic troubles? Go ahead.
He's going to make a war.
He's going to make a war, but this isn't war making.
No, this is slaughter.
This is slaughter. This is a withdrawal of a United States military presence. This is opening the door to genocide, as we said. And this has also, at long last, roused his Republican allies in Congress against him.
You should read that.
I'm going to read this. I encourage everyone who doesn't read the president's Twitter feed to do so. It is a psychoanalyst's dream. So here's what he said in a couple of tweets from yesterday. As I have stated strongly before, and just to reiterate, if Turkey does anything that I, in my great and unmatched wisdom...
Wait, repeat that phrase.
In my great and unmatched wisdom, consider to be off limits, I will totally destroy and obliterate... Destroy and obliterate.
That's redundant.
It is. The economy of Turkey. I've done before, in parentheses...
What?
We're going to have to take the next 15 minutes just to parse these two tweets. They must, with Europe and others, watch over the captured ISIS fighters and families. The U.S. has done far more than anyone could ever have expected, including the capture of 100% of the ISIS caliphate.
Not true.
No. It is time now for others in the region, some of great wealth, to protect their own territory. The USA is great!
Ruff, ruff, ruff.
God, that is just a rat's nest of weird.
Well, you know, the guy is psychotic, and the Republicans are chicken. And there's a word with four letters in it that I would add to that.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned before,
starts with S and ends with T.
The Republicans in Congress have rarely, if ever, been able to publicly oppose Trump on any of his decisions, however misguided. This time, it appears to be different. And so this tweet, I would say, is in response to that criticism, because of course, all kinds of people, Republicans and otherwise in Congress, have said, hey, what? Well, this is crazy here. You're withdrawing our military presence and allowing this Turkish invasion of Syria is going to result in a lot of dead Kurds, yeah. Right? So Trump, I think, is tweeting this in response to that criticism, saying, oh, don't worry. If Turkey gets out of line, we'll go in and smash them. And then he adds that he's done it before.
Which is not so.
Yeah, there is a Trump Tower in Istanbul. Did that destroy the economy of Turkey? Maybe that's what he's referring to.
Look, this guy is crazy. What is really shocking is that the old reactionary, really, party that the Republican Party had become prior to him has now become the party of the fascists. I mean, it can't be, that's not an exaggeration. It's the case that the Republican Party has betrayed any of its traditions, all of its traditions, and is now essentially sucking up to this really stupid pig.
Yeah, they have. They have done so consistently up until this point. I don't know if the fracture over this Turkish decision is enough.
Well, it should scare the hell out of them.
It should scare the hell out of them. But is it enough, for example, to convince Senate Republicans to vote to remove him from office?
No.
I tend to think you're right, but I think it's an open question now, whereas it wasn't before.
That's true. There's good cause now, for sure.
It may be that, say what you will of Mitch McConnell, the man is not dumb. He may be able to perceive that continued political support of the president all the way through articles of impeachment and a potential trial in the Senate might be a bridge too far for them now. Maybe they're going to realize that in order to protect their own political futures, they have to decouple themselves from this president, that the fallout, that the collateral damage of supporting him is simply too high.
But he's a stable genius.
Am I grasping at straws here? I'm thinking that we might actually see him removed from office.
I think it's possible. I will acknowledge that that's a possibility. I'm not sure that it's a likelihood, though.
I think you're right at this point.
I think that the Republican Party is too caught up in its own foolishness, I guess I'll call it that for the nicest word possible, and its ambition to acknowledge the reality of the situation and to begin to do something to get a handle on this guy. I don't even care if they kick him out of the presidency. I want him strapped down on a table and examined carefully. No, I mean it. There's a psychosis there that's beyond anything I've ever had. And I used to work in a mental hospital.
There's a fetish there beyond anything I've ever had.
Well, we're not going to talk about the fetishes. Too kinky. Way
right.
Too kinky.
503-231-8187 is the number to take part in this conversation. Very interested in hearing what our listeners have to say about all this.
Yeah.
You can also write to us at the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. And also you can tweet at us at HonestAbe72.
And I want to suggest something else. I really would love to see our healthcare and many of our other services evolve into some kind of social democratic thing like exists in Germany or Sweden or France or many other countries. But if the price of trying to do that is to keep Trump around, I'll pass on it. I've decided this. I hate this, but I think I have to say this. And I think that, unfortunately, the only candidate that can possibly beat Trump, maybe, I don't know, might be Biden, who is dumber than dumb.
I don't want to get into speculation about the Democratic side of the presidential race.
Okay, let's drop it. Don't call us about that.
Yeah, they don't listen to us. But let's go to the phones. Lou, good morning.
Hey, so it sounds like you're trying to address, I would guess, nuance and details, perhaps. To Joe's first point about diesel pollution, which
well, that, we're not
going to talk about that much. But I was just going to say that some of us at PSU, I individually myself, used to work at MSERB in Research Triangle Park for EPA, Mobile Sources Emissions Research Branch. It was just typing, but it was for 12 engineers who were doing diesel particulate emissions research. So mm-hmm. that could be a possible, a resource possibly. In terms of Trump's group of, well, what would you call them, acolytes, are you following Gordon Sondland from Portland?
No.
No, well, who's he?
Well, Gordon Sondland owns a few hotels. He's a millionaire. He donated $1 million to Trump's campaign.
All right. Now I know who he was.
Now
he's a diplomat. Yeah.
Well, he just got canceled this morning by the State Department. He's talked to Congress. And he's also, which is sort of traditional, the ambassador to the European Union. You get appointed ambassador if you donate.
Yeah,
so
right.
So it sounds like you kind of know who he is. On, I guess, history and nuance versus the Kurds and Turkey, et cetera, you probably both already know about some of this, but I just thought I'd mention it briefly. In terms of, at PSU, we have a film program. And there's three that are, I believe, kind of relevant to some of the stuff you've been talking about so far today. One's called Ararat, which is about the Armenian genocide, an excellent film. One's called In the Fade, which is pretty recent. And it's not about the Turkish government. It's about Turkish immigrants to Germany. And based on a true story, neo-Nazi attacks against people who are Turkish immigrants, which is also interesting. And you may have already heard about or not, there's a film in Fox 10 downtown at the moment called Official Story, which it seems like it would fit perfectly for the general tenor of the Abe and Joe program. It's, and you may already know about it. I didn't know about it. It's about a whistleblower in UK against Tony Blair and George Bush about the WMDs, and it's a true story. It has Keira Knightley and Ralph Fiennes. And apparently the whistleblower was kind of the British CIA operative, and she came out to newspapers saying that they're lying, that Bush and Blair were lying about the case for war.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to get, you may remember, Joe, specifically, I guess there were five smaller countries on the UN Security Council that were lobbied to try to support the resolution, and then the resolution didn't go, and Bush decided, and Blair decided to go anyway. So I think Official Story is really interesting as an example of whistleblowers now. It was made before the current whistleblower situation. But that's basically my comment for today. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for the call, Lou.
Excellent call.
Yeah.
We have a general tenor to our show.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Tenor?
That's what he said.
I'm more like a contralto, I think.
I could continue in this vein, but I'm going to spare everybody.
No humor today. Yeah.
So returning to the president's Twitter feed, which, as I mentioned, is it could be a case study.
Well, we could do a whole show of his tweets, pardon me.
So he tweets this. The timestamp on this tweet is 11 hours ago, which would have been the middle of the night in D.C.
Maybe they could just give him a sleeping pill every evening in his milk. No, he doesn't do milk. What does he drink? He doesn't drink alcohol.
Blood of virgins?
What is it?
I don't know.
I don't know. This guy is so weird. I don't even know how to characterize him.
He tweets a quote from the fascist lawyer Alan Dershowitz. I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Oh, I know. Right. I know Alan.
Who appeared on Sean Hannity's show.
I was once at a cocktail party with Alan.
With Alan Dershowitz?
Yeah.
Oh, I bet.
He shook my hand. I shook his hand. I said, nice to meet you. I lied.
Oh, and that was it?
That's it.
Oh, probably for the best.
I think so.
Okay. Trump quotes Dershowitz, quote, "There are no felonies. There are no impeachable offenses. The Constitution's very clear. that you need bribery, treason, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. You can't be impeached for the conduct that's been alleged in this case. And then Trump goes on to add, a scam. Okay. Let's unpack this a little bit.
Well, you know, Dershowitz, I don't like to use sexist language, but he's a whore. I mean, he just serves the interests of the ruling class. He's been doing this for years.
Why would you say you don't like to use sexist language and then go ahead and use the sexist language?
Because I couldn't think of another term.
I want you to take that next step, Joe, and not use the sexist language.
What should I use?
Give me a word. He's a jerk? A fool?
That's an idiot? Fool. Okay. I'll go with fool.
All right. Okay.
Foolish. I'll go with foolish.
Dershowitz, the fool, says the Constitution is very clear that you need bribery. Okay, bribery.
Yeah.
All right. The president has been enriching himself through his own business and holdings since the moment he took the oath of office.
Right.
Including many millions of dollars spent by foreign dignitaries to stay at his hotel in D.C.
Right. Well, yes.
One might consider that to amount to bribery.
Well, it is bribery.
He's not paying a bribe. He's, in a sense, receiving a bribe. This is also a violation of the Constitution's Emoluments Clause.
Right, which people need to understand. The president is not supposed to make money off of the office, period.
Then Mr. Dershowitz's next point, treason.
Well, he's guilty of treason if anyone ever was.
The president has appealed both in private and in public for help winning his election from hostile powers.
Well, in fact, he has all but directly advocated a civil war if he doesn't get elected.
He has.
And
again,
that's treason.
Again, we mentioned violations of the Emoluments Clause. So there you go. You've got bribery, treason, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. So I'm going to go ahead and declare Mr. Dershowitz's statement false, and by implication, the president's tweet false, and say that if there was ever a president who met the textbook definition of a chief executive who deserves impeachment, it is this one.
Deserves is perhaps
deserves. Well,
yeah,
if you commit an impeachable offense, you deserve to be impeached.
Yeah. It's
fairly straightforward logical process.
I agree.
Okay. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can tweet at us. You can Facebook us. You can do all these different things. Very interested in hearing what our callers have to say.
You know, I would be curious to hear a rational caller who would defend Trump and his behavior.
I'd be interested to hear that, too. But
I say rational.
I don't think such a caller exists.
No one certainly not listening to this station. I mean, you know.
I would say they don't exist, period. I don't think you can make a rational defense of the president.
Well,
let's go to Barth. Barth, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Joe was reaching for a good term for Mr. Dershowitz, and fool works, but a tool, I think, is better. He's just,
tool. Oh, yes, but that, of course, does have a double meaning. And it is masculine. What? It's an attack on men.
Well, you didn't
okay,
want to
man.
Use sexist
okay,
language.
Okay, man, I'll go with it. I'll go with it. If I'm going to use sexist language, I can just as well attack men. Why not?
In any event, yes, he's... It's funny that he gets such a range of supposed credibility in the larger press, you know, that he's very... quotable, and he's a talking head.
Yeah, well, that's right. He probably sells papers, you know.
Oh, yeah. But it seems like he's not just misguided, but tremendously biased.
Well, I would add... I would add to that that he's actually psychotic. So that's a new... that's an overlay which makes me even more frightened of him.
Are you speaking of Dershowitz or the resident?
Oh, I was talking about the president. Dershowitz is just an opportunist.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think that even his supporters, more of them are reexamining their faith, or at least their opinion, because this is just beyond the pale. I mean, the Kurds carried water for the U.S. government for a tremendous effort to move U.S. policy in a direction that most of the country wanted it to go in. And they were supposed to be not only our friends, but our allies. This is kind of reminiscent of the U.S. turning their back on the Hmong from Vietnam, you know, who were also doing the same sort of work.
Yeah, actually, that's a good parallel, I think.
But that policy or that I won't say repudiation exactly, but disassociation that happened at that time was expedient politically for the U.S., but it wasn't an arbitrary decision by one guy in the middle of the night. And this was, you know, I mean, the military, our military is going, WTF, you know, I mean, what are you talking about? Why are we doing this?
Well, I agree. I have a solution. Phenobarbital.
Well, I don't think adding drugs to Donald Trump is going to be
strong downers can stop him from tweeting.
Nor is the administration of narcotics. I don't think that's delineated in the Constitution.
No, not narcotics. I'm talking about phenobarbital. Not
barbiturate.
Barbiturate. Yeah, okay. It just makes you go to sleep.
Yeah.
Maybe for a long time.
Several years, that would be helpful, but I don't think that's...
Oh, no, we don't advocate that because that would be a crime.
And we're so worried about crime.
Well, we are.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call, man. No, I realize that I've become apoplectic with this, and I actually don't understand what happened to patriotism. Now, I'm not a heavy into, because patriotism is often the, what is the term, the last refuge of a scoundrel.
Yep.
But the fact of the matter is, this is the most unpatriotic president we've ever had.
Oh, indeed.
He's doing the United States disservice at every tweet.
Disservice at every tweet.
No, really. I mean, it's this guy's really crazy, and he's really full of it, and he thinks he's a stable genius.
Right.
I don't think he's stable or a genius.
It's great and unmatched wisdom.
Yeah. Unmatched wisdom. Woo! Godlike. Woo!
All right, coming up today on KBOO at 9, Alternative Radio, we hear from the late Russell Means, a renowned activist for Indian rights, founding member of the American Indian Movement, and its first national director. At 10, it's Flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein spends the entire hour with award-winning Palestinian-American poet and essayist Shiha Nye. Apologies for pronunciation there. At 11, it's Stage and Studio. As part of National Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October, DMA presents a half-hour adaptation of the Breast Cancer Monologues. And at 11:30, Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews painter Janine Nagy about her show, Box Breathing. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, Russell Means, I always admired him immensely, and I thought he was a very brave man. And he, you know, had a major role in AIM. He's one of the founders. But also there was a trial here involving AIM and its effort to supply goods and whatever to the people at Wounded Knee. And this was something in which Bill Walden showed up to support the movement. It was a very interesting time many years ago. Not so many, actually.
All right, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Joe.
Yes.
If Turkey invades northern Syria, as it appears they're going to do,
yes,
how do you see that playing out?
Well, first of all, they may be biting off more than they can chew. The Kurds are well-armed now, thanks to us, and they really, really, really are trying to survive, so they'll be fighting for survival. And this is a desperate people in a desperate situation. And the Kurds take no prisoners, traditionally. And they have a long history, which includes genocide.
But right now they're looking after prisoners.
Well, the Kurds are.
Yeah, the Kurds are.
Well, the first thing the Kurds will have to do is let their prisoners go. No, I mean, the strategy here has to be the Kurds will have to realign, practically speaking. They can't trust us anymore. Remember that Erdogan has turned to Russia to get weapons as well as the United States, playing both sides. And is absolutely an extreme opportunist. And the whole situation is so fraught with danger, just that whole region. If this is done, what it's going to end up doing, I think, is ironically strengthening Iran, weakening Israel, and in general creating a horrid crisis in the region. That's what I think.
And I think we need to look at the possibility that at least in that region of Syria, Kurds might be ethnically cleansed.
Well, if history is any indicator, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned earlier that the region of Kurdistan that encompasses where most Kurds live through the swaths of those four countries.
Right.
In Turkey, the region of Kurdistan that extends into Turkey, there's long been tension, even violent tension, between the Turkish government and the Kurds who live in that
area.
Well,
also, the Kurds, when we say the Kurds, we're using a collective term, but in fact, there are various groups. There are Kurds who are radical and are trying to fight Turkey. That is not all of the Kurdish people, by any means.
But we should note here that it's been the presence of U.S. power, soft power, and the presence of military forces that has kept in check the Turkish government's, I think it's safe to say, desire to crack down harder on that minority within their borders.
Well, I think that's true.
Yeah. So now they'll be able to slip over the border into Syria and pretty much, I think, act with impunity.
Well, that slipped. March.
March. March. Yes.
March over.
Let's go to the phone. Sean, you're next.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
You know, I can't tell you how many times on KBOO I've heard people talk about how the United States can't be policeman to the world, and how much criticism I've heard over the decades about the military-industrial complex.
You're seeing irony. You're seeing irony here, aren't you?
Indeed.
Well, to put it mildly, why does NATO even exist? Why do we still have 400 military bases around the world? Why are we spending more in the Cold War now, more in the military now than we were 30 years ago when the Cold War was still going on? So, I'm not going to criticize Trump from the right. I consider myself a leftist. And so anything that shuts down the military-industrial complex and brings the troops home, I'm in favor of. And quite frankly, you guys sound like a couple of neoconservatives. It's really disturbing to hear you on KBOO sounding like this.
I have to agree with you on virtually everything you said. Yeah, we should not be the world's policemen. No, we should not spend the massive amount of our discretionary income that we do propping up the military-industrial complex. No, we should never have had a military presence in that part of Syria to begin with. It is, of course, a legacy of the ill-gotten war in Iraq that happened now almost 2 decades ago.
Yeah, the bad Bushes.
What we're looking at here, and I think where you detect the irony, is that given the situation as it is, where Syria has descended into chaos in the wake of a brutal civil war. There are displaced populations all over that region, and there are American troops there. To suddenly disrupt that situation is going to result in many, many deaths. So, yes, it is.
Are we going to intervene on behalf of the Houthis in Yemen?
Or I don't know. I'm not talking about those situations right now. I'm talking about
the Houthis.
I'm talking about the situation as it relates to this president's seemingly impetuous decision to give Turkey a free hand here. That means a lot of people who are going to die who might not otherwise have died. Regardless of what you say about the antecedents to this situation, that is going to be the result of this decision.
Well, like our tax dollars are being used by Saudi Arabia to murder Houthis every day.
Well, that's true. In fact, the whole American foreign policy in that region, in fact, American foreign policy generally, has been imperialist for a long, long time.
Where are you guys coming from on this? It's like
I'm coming from. I can't speak for Abe. We often disagree. Where I am coming from is a concern. This has nothing. It really doesn't have much to do with the question of what the United States should be doing militarily. It's in the most direct consequential thing. We have violated every agreement we have made with this decision, and we are siding with Turkey, which is really playing Russia against us and is extremely opportunistic and is run by a dictator. We are playing into the hands of that dictator because of a madman. This is a situation that exceeds any policy understanding. That would be my position.
If Turkey was that bad, we would disband NATO, right? Like, why are we even still... Why does NATO exist even at this point?
That's another good question.
Yeah, that's another good question, but that's a question that can only be answered once you have a situation of reasonable stability. Right now, things are so unstable.
So the United States military, let me get this straight, the United States military is going to bring stability to a region.
No, the United States military has very little role to play. The policies of the United States, which threatens to control Turkey, has a serious role. The fact of the matter is that Erdogan is far and again a far worse and eviler leader of a powerful nation, which happens to be part of NATO, than are the other members of NATO. So we have to be very
well. You guys
careful.
Know we have a major air force base in Turkey.
I know there are a lot of things we could do
if Turkey is an evil country. There's a lot of things we could do to hurt Turkey.
Yeah, I'm concerned with the term Turkey being an evil country. I don't think the Turkish people. Obviously it's the leadership that's the problem.
Of course, so we can apply pressure by pulling our bases out of Turkey.
We could do that.
Military home across the board.
We could do that.
That should be the leftist position, right?
We could do that. It would be appropriate to pull out our bases in Turkey, but it is not appropriate to withdraw from that border, which protects, at this point, to some degree, the Kurdish people.
I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree on this one, guys.
Well, I think so, and I think you're raising good points.
You do.
I don't want to dismiss them at all.
Okay. Oh, well, he's gone. Well, I wanted to engage one last point, and I'll just go ahead and say it. If you're talking about the overarching question of the presence of United States military power in that part of the world,
or any part of the world.
That overarching question, the answer to that is where do you and I and probably a lot of our listeners fall on that question? Well, I would much rather that the United States was not spread out across the globe in a military context. I wish we didn't have bases in hundreds of countries.
Well, and I would go further. I wish we weren't dominated by a military-industrial complex.
Yes, indeed. And if you're looking at the question of, how do we withdraw United States troops from the Middle East, that's a question that needs to be engaged at the highest level in the United States and at the highest level in every country who's involved in that situation. That question, how do we withdraw troops, demands an answer that is deliberate, that is thoughtful, that is negotiated, that is carefully executed, anything but this sort of abrupt withdrawal that Trump is proposing that we do.
That it seems like he decides in the middle of the night.
Right.
Without consulting anybody.
It was or maybe after getting off the phone with a dictator. The decision to go there in the first place was ill-advised. Absolutely. The decision to go to war in Iraq was the biggest and most consequential foreign policy decision of our time.
Yeah, and full of lies.
Right.
And the Bushes joke about it afterward. I mean, it's disgusting.
Right. So getting out of there should be a national priority for the United States and for all of the allies that we dragged into that mess. And it requires a very, as I said, careful and deliberate decision-making process.
Yeah, but all of that, all of what you're saying, while true, does unfortunately ignore the point that was made by a previous caller. We are the world aggressor.
Yes.
And we are the creator of all of these crises to a great extent. Not that there's innocence on other sides.
Right.
But and in order to stop all this nonsense, we, that is the United States, needs to have, I'm going to have to say it, some kind of serious social revolution. And
indeed.
I'm not talking violence. I'm talking about a change in policy of a fundamental kind that strips the power of the military-industrial complex. How to do that? I don't know.
Right. And it's fine and appropriate for us as lefties to sit back and acknowledge the fundamental wrongness of the military-industrial complex and its subsequent presence around the globe. It's important that we do that, but it's not sufficient, right? And it doesn't address the human cost of Trump's erratic decision.
Or the complexities that are now created by all of this.
Right, indeed.
Including a potential genocide.
But should we be there? No. What do we do now that we're there? That's a very complex question and one that is not helped at all by Trump's knee-jerk decision after a late-night phone call.
Really? Let's go to the phones. 231-8187. Tom, you're on the air.
Hello, fellas.
Hi. Hello.
Hey, I'm just passing through, and I heard your show, and I have to say it's pretty entertaining. Sometimes I forget how crazy liberals can be.
Oh,
and you say that he's not patriotic or the least patriotic president, and I would say he is the absolute most patriotic president that we've ever had. He's the only president who only considers citizens when he makes his judgments.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm.
Are you making that? Is that a serious statement on your behalf that he only considers citizens? Serious. When making decisions.
Name another politician that wants to close the borders. Name one.
That's not the question here. You're telling me he would...
Wait a minute. Only considers citizens. Both of you, wait. Listen.
One way an illegal helps the average U.S. citizen. Just one way.
Well, so your connection is bad.
But I would like to answer the last part of your thing. Have you eaten anything lately?
Yes, I have. But you know what? The United States has a great migrant worker program. So
we're talking about the very people you're putting down.
A migrant worker who comes into the country illegally and works is here legally.
Okay, we're not
talking about illegal.
If we could step away from the subject of undocumented. No, don't cut him off. Did we cut him off? We shouldn't have cut him off. That was an opportunity. Are you still here? Okay, we're not talking about undocumented people right now. I'm addressing your statement. I'm addressing your statement that the president only takes into account the concerns of citizens when he makes decisions. I would say that statement is demonstrably false on its face and is indefensible. The decision for Trump, for example, to take his Air Force retinue and put them up at one of his own hotels when he travels abroad, is that a decision made considering only the needs of the people? When he passes a tax cut that enriches his donor class, is that a decision made with taking into account the concerns of the people? No, I could go on and on and on. That, sir, is an ignorant statement. And if you're defending his patriotism on those grounds, I suggest perhaps you start with the dictionary. Look up patriotism. It starts with the letter P.
Hey, I'm just a middle-class guy, and I can tell you what, after he passed his tax thing, I compared my paychecks to what they were previous, and I make more money, and I still pay less. All right? So, go back to the illegals.
Wait a minute.
No, we're not going back to the illegals, and there's no such thing as an illegal.
Go back to the illegals because it shoots holes in your patriotic.
All right, goodbye. Maybe that wasn't the opportunity I thought it was.
Well, you certainly killed killed the rationality of that discourse.
Let's go to Susan. Susan, yeah, save us, please.
Oh, hi. Hi. I'm in your court here. Just wanted to kind of go back to the call before the last call around, and I appreciated your comments around the complexity of the moment decision to, you know, how do we leave the places where our military is versus the overall goal to eventually be a military industrial complex nation. And one comment I don't think I heard you mention was just our role as the primary arms dealer, our companies in the United States and our government for that part of the world and probably for the entire world. Because it's not only our CIA and other historical events, interventions that we've done that have caused many of these crises based on colonialism, but also we continue to arm these. And so the caller that felt he was in favor of leaving, but we're not really leaving. If we were to not have our troops there, we still have so much investment in that in terms of the arms dealings that we do with all the, you know, many of the countries there. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I just want to, this is me speaking, is not necessarily my partner here, though I suspect he'll agree with me. The notion that somehow the brown people, this is an important point. I'm not being racist. I'm pointing out the racism involved. The notion that the brown people, and this is Trump, the brown people are invading our country and doing great harm is absurd. The fact of the matter is that since the Bracero programs, and before that, since the time when Mexico and much of, I mean, Texas and much of California and so on were part of Mexico, and we defeated them in an unjust war back in the 1840s so that we could extend slavery, and that's an important point. Since then, we have been constantly attacking and dissing and destroying the legitimacy of the nations to our south. And the response, because of all of that, and the opportunities that are clear in the United States for work. In fact, the Becerra program, which was very, very important, very, very important, demonizing. I'm kind of shocked at this, actually. Demonizing people desperately seeking employment, desperately seeking help, is just silly and short-sighted. And I don't want to let it go uncommented on. I appreciate the perception that somehow we are being invaded and being harmed. But the fact of the matter is, all the statistics point out very clearly the advantage of having a low-level working force. Look, the rich, the middle class, when they have their houses cleaned, when they have their gardens mowed, when they have their fruit picked, all of that is very much dependent on labor that is willing to work at wages that most American workers could not afford to work at. And this is just an economic reality. The demonization of people who speak Spanish is an ugly, racist phenomenon and shouldn't be countenanced. And that's probably why Abe got so angry. Okay, now let's go back to the phones and continue this conversation. 231-8187. I think Chris is next.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to comment a little bit more on the Rojava situation and, you know, the Turkish, you know, plan to attack into Syria against the Kurds. I think that part of what we're dealing with is kind of the reemergence of polycentric imperialism. I mean, it's still true that...
Yeah, that's a very good phrase for it, yeah.
You know, the U.S. still, you know, has the military force domination that it does relative to other countries, but in a sense, that's a measure of, you know, growing U.S. weakness, the hollowing out of the economic strength of the country. So, you know, we get stuff by coercion that operates in a sort of different way than it did at the, you know, peak, you know, say in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
In the Middle East there, the other thing is, you know, back in the day, there were, you know, debates about sort of how much we should understand the Cold War in terms of, you know, just Moscow versus Washington versus an approach that, you know, analyzed and recognized the autonomy of local regional actors, you know, often in nationalist terms. But so, you know, you've got a number of sort of sub-imperial powers, you know, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Turkey all kind of, you know, competing there in very complicated ways. And the last point I just wanted to make about this is one of the things that's really disturbing to me about what Trump's doing here is that he's reproducing what the U.S. did in the very first phase of the Long Gulf War, you know, at the end of the invasion in 1991, where, you know, the Kurds had risen up at the behest of the U.S. in northern Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and as did, you know, people who were sometimes called marsh Arabs, people in the what had been wetlands, you know,
right,
at the mouth of the Tigris and Euphrates, and the U.S. just abandoned those people, right?
Right.
So it's, you know, it's sort of weird to talk about ethical imperialism, but
yes, it is weird.
But it's, you know, if the United States, when the United States chooses to exercise power like that, you know, we on the left need to insist on, you know, some kind of moral consistency and, you know...
And predictability. It's both consistency and predictability that are lacking with this guy. We're not even talking about imperialism in the largest sense.
Right, right. But you know, I mean, it's a slippery slope. You know, I'm somewhat at risk of, you know, the... what's the phrase I'm looking for? But, you know, it's humanitarian interventionism, right? The Samantha Powers kind of thing. I recognize that I'm in that territory. But that's, you know, if we're going to see ourselves on the left as having some responsibility to try to, you know, direct U.S. policy, you know, or you know, make comments on it, then we have to recognize that you know, facts have been created in the way, you know, in the way the U.S. has intervened in Syria up till now. And so just, as you say, the consistency, you know, the rapid shift is, it has consequences for real people there.
Yes. No. I want to say I agree with you. The thing that we're reacting to here is not, we're not talking about the overarching reality of American imperialism. What we're really talking about is not only inconsistency but craziness, actual craziness, and the dangerousness of that and the cruelty of it. The way in which people are being treated at the border, the way in which this Trump government is threatening to treat the Kurdish people who are our allies, all of these things are random virtually and evil and opportunistic and hurtful to large numbers of people. I want to add one other thing. Recently, the caller was saying, well, you know, I'm doing better with this new tax break. I don't know the person's income. But I do know that the reality of what happened with this tax break is that the rich got incredibly richer and the rest of us got you know what, and it ain't good. And that's the truth of that matter. I also want to go on to some other people because we're getting a little bit stalled, I think. 231-8187, let's go to Rico. Rico, you're on the air.
Cool, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate your program. Appreciate all your thoughts. And I won't take much time. I just have one little thing to say, really. And that has to do with the recurring phrase you've used of the military-industrial complex.
Okay.
And I just want to say that, you know, when Eisenhower wrote that phrase, they chopped out a piece of it, which was the military-industrial congressional complex.
Are you sure
of
that?
About a yes.
Okay.
And if you talk about a social revolution, you're talking about voting, and you're talking about the fact that it's whether it's the lobbyists or us at the polls, we're responsible for the fact that it is about guns and missiles and real estate and Trump towers in the world that have gotten beyond our control because we didn't pay attention to who we put in the Congress that allows these kinds of funds and this kinds of policy to develop. And I just want to say that when you use the term military industrial complex, that the word congressional needs to be in there because that's where they get the funds from in order to provide for the industries to build those weapons and to think is have it. If we talk about climate change, what about nuclear disarmament? Whatever happened to the social complex of people and nations getting together instead of fighting the other, but to work with the other for the sake of the whole? And this is about the development of a social consciousness in the world. And we need to see that we do have leverage in who we vote for, and that means paying attention to what the policies are.
Well, I think you're right, in a large part. I just want to point out that the money that is necessary to win a seat in Congress in many states is really the money of the very wealthy and powerful. And that is a problem. If we had a system of federally supported elections and a whole bunch of other reforms, we would move closer to social democracy, which I want to also make clear is not socialism. It is a system that supports the needy, that supports all of us with health care, that supports housing where it's needed, that is a just system, that supports the needs of people who have been discriminated against historically for so long. I want to go on to the to other callers, though. 231-8187. Marilyn, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, I'd like to back up just a tiny bit and look at the big picture.
Sure.
And the big picture to me is Rex Tillerson deal with Putin to drill for oil in the Arctic, which is trillions of dollars.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that. By the way, since you mentioned that, I want to recommend Rachel Maddow's book, which analyzes the one power that Russia still has, which is petroleum. But go ahead.
It's perfect. She does it in slam dunk. That's a great book. I want to point out that Trump and his GOP donor friends are working really, really hard to undermine Zelensky in the Ukraine. So because of the sanctions, to get rid of the sanctions and to take over the government again of the Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
like Manafort did earlier. And the Syria thing is also tied. The Syria situation benefits Putin, because Russia has a huge interest in that. The Kurds are sitting on the oil. The Kurds own the.
Well, they
Kurds
don't own. They occupy a great.
Yeah, they occupy. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're on the oil. You've got to get rid of the Kurds to get to the oil, and that's what Russia wants. That's what everybody wants, actually. And Trump has a deal. He has a deal. And Tillerson and those guys with Putin to get rid of the sanctions and to get rich off that oil. I mean, Putin's one of the richest men in the world because of his oil, his state-owned oil company. But that's what I see.
Okay, well,
thanks very much.
Thank you very much for the call. To a large extent, you're right. When we start really parsing what's going on, it all boils down to who has the goods, who has the power. And the fact of the matter is that what Trump did was ripped away the facade, and maybe in the long run that might even in a way be a good thing, but ripped away the facade that there is some kind of democracy in the United States, which ignores the fact of power, not just the military-industrial complex, but industry itself, the wealth, the vast wealth held by so few people compared to the rest of us. I want to get, we're running out of people. We're running out of time. And I want to get one more person in at least. So Zaki, I think you're up next.
Thank you. Hey, I was born in Syria. You know, I've been here for 45 years. And watching all this unfold.
Oh, we lost him. I don't know why. I don't know how. Oh. That was odd. Unfortunate. All right, I guess that gives me an opportunity, ha ha ha, to kind of summarize where we're going here, because we got a lot of different kinds of calls and a lot of different opinions. Look, the large issue is the unequal way in which democracy is carried out in the United States. The fact that a person like Trump could rise to such power and could silence one of the parties, which was not a party I favored. In fact, I thought it was horrible, the GOP. But in fact, that party has turned into and hardened into really the support of the others. Oh, wait, Zaki, you're back. Go ahead. Quick.
Hey, so I was born in Syria. I've been here for 45 years. And I can only describe to what's happening, obviously, in the last decade as traumatizing, not only to what my family and what Syrians have suffered, but also on the huge amount of misinformation, a lot of it very cruel about a people who are very generous, very loving, very loyal, both here in the U.S. to the United States and both to the home country of Syria. The U.S. has no business in that country, and the truth about it is the U.S. presence in Syria has only complicated things for Syrians and for the socialism, which has just achieved a huge victory. Many people oversee that Syria's victory, and it is a victory,
mm-hmm.
is an unbelievable victory for socialism around the world, that the people were able to endure that and fight for that for all these years and still maintain it in the face of how many superpowers. It's really something that is hard to fathom on the victory of it.
Yeah.
And as far as the Kurds go, I'm telling you, as a Syrian, you know, I'm still a Syrian citizen. This, you know, portrayed animosity between Syrians and Kurds is completely untrue. If it wasn't for
okay,
Syria...
I have to interrupt you because we actually run out of time. I have to say that what you're saying fits with what I believe, and I appreciate your call, but darn it, we're out of time, and I want to quickly get in a word here. The root causes of the problems of the Middle East lie in the settlement of World War I by the imperial powers, and we must never forget that. And with that, I want to wish you all a good time and pray that the Trump either gets sense or goes away.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the American Bamboo Society Annual Conference, Wednesday, October 16th through Sunday, October 20th at various locations around Portland. The American Bamboo Society Annual Conference features speakers and workshops, building with bamboo classes, and also tours of bamboo gardens, silent auctions, and more. Again, that's the American Bamboo Society Annual Conference, Wednesday, October 16th through Sunday, October 20th, at various locations around Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It's 1 minute after 9. Coming up at 10, it's Flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein spends the entire hour with award-winning Palestinian-American poet and essayist Shiha Nye. At 11, it's Stage and Studio as part of